At Lowe's, our members get more. With the My Lowe's Rewards programs, you can shop member-only deals for your home and business every week. Plus, members earn points on eligible purchases. So what are you waiting for? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Anything to lose, I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. As I mentioned on this week's follow-up, today's episode is going to be a little bit different than anything we've done in the past. A whole lot of things are kind of colliding right now with some of our past cases and work we're doing on our potential next case. And we had a couple of interviews fall through this week, and it kind of left us in limbo as to what we were going to do for the episode. But listener Lori Bell had posted onto our Facebook fan page that whenever we had some time, she would love it if we could highlight a particular case that she's familiar with and is very interested in, and it's a case that she feels is solvable, and that if we can just get more eyes and ears on it, perhaps maybe we could find Kyron Horman. Kyron Horman was a 7-year-old boy who went missing on June 4th of 2010 from his school in Portland, Oregon. It's both a baffling and a tragic case. And so since we didn't have anything on the docket this week, we decided to take this opportunity and fulfill Lori's request and do an episode on Kyron's disappearance to see if we can't maybe generate some new leads, or at the very least, add some exposure to this tragic missing persons case. As far as the format of this goes, it won't be as long as a normal episode, because I have actually had very little to do with the prep work on this. So this is also the first time that you've heard an episode that has been 100% researched and outlined and written by Erica. She did all of this by herself this week because I was completely out of pocket. There's a lot going on with our potential case that we'll be covering, probably be covering during season 17. I've had multiple meetings with attorneys on that case, and that's just eaten up all of my time. So I handed this off to Erica this week, and she has done all of the research. She's written everything that you're going to hear today. She's done a great job. I just finished reading through all of it before stepping into the booth. Rather than try to rewrite it into a script, I'm just going to go through Erica's notes. So with all that being said, we're going to go ahead and get started with this special edition of Truth and Justice, where we're highlighting the missing persons case of Kyron Horman from Portland, Oregon. So the way I tasked Erica in putting this together was the same way we normally investigate a case. First things first, as always, is victimology. So I asked her to find everything she could possibly find out about Kyron's home life and his life leading up to his disappearance. So here we go. Kyron was born on September 9, 2002, in Portland, Oregon, at St. Vincent's Hospital. He has brown hair, blue eyes, glasses, and a V-shaped birthmark on his forehead. His family describes Kyron as being sweet, smart, and shy. And according to the Kyron Horman Foundation's website, Kyron enjoyed playing outside, mini golf, soccer, watching movies, including Transformers, Iron Man, and Finding Nemo. Just about what you would expect from any 7-year-old boy in 2002. Now, Kyron's mom said that he was the child you just want to be around whenever you can. In 2010, as I mentioned, he was 7 years old and he was attending the Skyline Elementary School. The school was near to Forest Park. There was a lot of wooded area just adjacent to the school, and that will become important later. His classroom was in room 209, and that's according to his parents, his mom and dad, which was just down the hall and to the left of the southern entrance slash stairwell. According to his stepmother, the class was on the second floor of the school. And Erica makes another note here to point out that there is dense forest right behind the school. So there's a lot of trees and forest, a lot of places for someone to disappear into. So Kyren's mom, her name is Desiree Young. She was pregnant when Kyren's parents got a divorce. So they were split up before Kyren was ever born. And according to Desiree, Kyren's dad, his name is Kane Horman, was cheating on her with Kyren's future stepmom, a woman named Terry Moulton. All of this is out in the public. There's been Dr. Phil episodes about this case. So that's where a lot of this stuff is drawn from their own words, their own accusations. So this is all allegedly based on the things they're saying. But after the divorce, Kyren's parents shared custody of him. In 2004, Desiree was diagnosed with kidney failure and she moved back in with her parents. And at that time, Kane was given full custody of Kyren, but Desiree stayed very active in his life. In 2007, Kane, again, that's Kyren's dad, married Terry, his future stepmom. And in 2008, the couple had a baby girl that they named Kiara. Kane has said that after having Kiara, their marriage grew rocky, which he thought to be a result of postpartum depression. But in the year leading up to Kyren's disappearance, Desiree, that's Kyren's biological mother, spoke about behavior that had concerned her. She said in some interviews that Kyren had begun wetting the bed and crying when he had to go back to Kane's house. She recalled that one day Terry called her, with Kyren crying in the background, asking Desiree to come pick him up. Desiree said that she tried to get back custody of Kyren, and Terry even asked her to on that phone call, but Kane wouldn't allow it. Both Desiree and Kane now have said that Terry had a drinking problem, which she denies. But Terry herself has said that the year leading up to Kyren's disappearance, she was not at all happy in her marriage, and that the couple would often have what she called discussions, but not screaming, yelling fights. Nonetheless, it did seem like all of the parents, including Desiree's husband, Tony Young, that they were all active in Kyren's life. Now, according to Terry, in the weeks leading up to his June 4th disappearance, Kyren had been staring off into space a lot, unable to remember things, walking into rooms and walking back out. She said she made an appointment for the Friday that happened to be after he disappeared to get him checked out. So that's everything that we know about Kyren's life leading up to the murder. Just to recap, his parents were divorced before he was ever born. He had shared custody between mom and dad for a while. At some point, his mom got sick and had to move back in with her parents, and dad got full custody. Dad then remarried, and so did mom. So he had a mom and a stepdad and a dad and a stepmom, but he lived primarily with dad and stepmom. And according to mom, leading up to the time of his disappearance, Kyren had been exhibiting behaviors like bedwetting that are commonly believed to be symptoms of sexual abuse. And according to Terry, Kyren's stepmom, Kyren had been acting off in the weeks leading up to the murder, not being able to remember things, spacing out a lot. Something was going on with him. So that is everything that we know about Kyren's victimology. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to get into the day of Kyren's disappearance.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Leah, and we're from the Grown Up Stuff podcast.
And just in time for tax season, on this week's episode, we're chatting with CPA Lisa Green Lewis about how small businesses can tackle their taxes using TurboTax Business.
A Forbes study mentioned that a whopping 93% of small businesses overpay their taxes. And 17% of Gen Zers believed that you could write off any expense as a business expense. So
can't blame them.
It's really important to do your taxes right.
Listen to Grown Up Stuff on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Grown Up
Stuff. Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
On June 4th, 2010, Skyline Elementary had student science fair presentations up in a classroom and held a science fair before school. Now, Terry, again, that's Kyron's stepmom, she said that it was on June 3rd when the actual science fair took place, but that she was unaware of it. But it was, in fact, on June 4th. And Kyron had a presentation in the fair on red-eyed tree frogs. Now, that morning, the doors opened at 8 a.m. And Terry drove Kyron to school that morning. He usually rode the bus. But they took Kane's white pickup truck to the school to bring his project home. They arrived at 8:15 a.m. They went and looked at student science projects. Multiple witnesses saw them there together that morning, including Kyron's teacher. And while there, Terry took a picture of Kyron standing in front of his project. He wore a black CSI shirt and black cargo pants. Terry says that she left at around 8:45 a.m. after she watched Kyron walking to his classroom. Last she saw, she says, he was almost to the classroom. She then left to run some errands. At 9 a.m., another student reported seeing Kyron near the south entrance of the school. This is believed to be the last sighting of Kyron. He had been marked absent for the day when class started at 10. And his teacher told authorities that Terry had told her that Kyron had an appointment that day, which is why she didn't question his absence despite seeing him earlier. After leaving the school, Terry went to two Fred Meyer stores until 10:10 a.m. She had to pick up medicine for Kiara, who was with her in the truck. After that, Terry said she drove around on rural roads until 11:39 to soothe Kiara from her earache, waiting for the medicine to kick in. She then checked into 24-Hour Fitness until 12:40, and she went home by 1:21. Around that time, she also posted the picture she had taken of Kyron to Facebook. Kyron's mom, Desiree, said that while Terry was out, she was showing Kyron's picture to people she kind of knew, which was unusual. According to Desiree, Terry then emailed Kyron's teacher asking when to get his science project. Later, Kyron did not arrive home on the bus as expected at 3:30, and at 3:46, the school secretary called 911 to report Kyron missing. 45 minutes later, the police arrived both at the school and at the Horman residence. So next, we're going to get into the timeline from there. At 5:50 p.m., a message went out to parents that said, quote, Kyron Horman did not arrive at home today. And at 7 p.m., the search for him began. From 7 to 7:15 p.m., media was called to the school. And at 7:46 p.m., the FBI was called to report Kyron missing. At 10:40 p.m., a search of the school and the Horman house were completed. So things were moving pretty quickly. This wasn't like we see on TV where there's a 24-hour wait before they'll report him missing. He didn't get off the bus at 3:30. By 5:50, there were messages going out from the school. And by 7:46 p.m., the FBI was called. Now, the searching stopped at 10:40 p.m., but the next day, June 5th, at 5 a.m., the search begins again. Authorities and volunteers and the families all searched all day on the 5th. Then the next day, on June 6th, parents and students of the school were called out to the school for interviews until about 4 p.m. And at 9 p.m. on the 6th, Kyron's case was escalated to a missing and endangered child case. Then 3 days later, on June 9th, an FBI spokeswoman says Kyron's family weren't doing media interviews, but they released a statement thanking everyone for their support. Now, backing up a little bit, between the 7th and 11th of June, there's all kinds of searching going on for Kyron. The search was one of the largest in state history, with more than 1,300 people looking for him. A 2-mile radius around the school had been searched, as well as parts of the, hopefully I'm pronouncing this right, the Suave Island, which is around 6 miles from the school. Then on June 11th, Kyron's family did a press conference. Once the men spoke, Desiree and Terry hugged each other in the back. Tony, that's Kyron's stepfather, read a letter to Kyron, and Kane, his father, thanked everyone for their hard work and urged anyone who knew anything to come forward. Then the next day, on the 12th, Kyron's case is shifted into a criminal investigation. Then on the 14th, divers search the water near the island that I mentioned before. On June 15th, the sheriff's office released a photo supposedly of Kyron's glasses. Now, over the course of all this time, Kyron's family was interviewed. None of them have ever been officially deemed as suspects. Everyone who had seen Kyron or knew him were interviewed, and they all took polygraph tests. According to Desiree, the rest of the family had pretty much been cleared, aside from Terry, Kyron's stepmother, who she said refused to cooperate later on. According to all the online sources, Terry failed two polygraph tests and then she walked out on the third. She actually spoke out about this on Dr. Phil, and she said that she'd failed because she couldn't hear well and that they had asked her a trick question. They asked if Kyron had been in the truck, and she said that she couldn't pass that because he was there on the way to school, but, quote, not when we left. She also claimed in that interview, and this is available online, where she's interviewed by Dr. Phil, she talks about the fact that she's hard of hearing in one ear, so because of that, in order to accommodate that, the polygrapher sat kind of behind her and to the side so that they were speaking more into her good ear. And then she said that she wasn't able to hear the questions properly because she relies a lot on reading lips. But actually, if you watch the interview, you'll see Dr. Phil then covers his mouth and talks to her as the interview goes on, and she hears him as responding to him just fine. And I can tell you, since most of the work into this episode, actually all the work into this episode came from Erica, she does have notes about her kind of feelings on things. And I'll just say this, that when she watched the interview of Terry on Dr. Phil, she's certainly not convinced that Terry is telling the truth about everything. But let's move forward in our timeline. We're going to go back to June. This is June 26. At that time, two 911 calls came from the Horman residence. The first was deemed a threat call, and the second, a custody issue. On that day, Kane, again, that's Kyron's dad, took Kiara and left the family's home. On the 28th, media outlets were tipped off that Terry had been served with a restraining order and a petition of dissolution of marriage. Then, on the 4th of July, media reported that Rodolfo Sanchez, the Horman's landscaper, said that Terry had offered him money to kill her husband. This had allegedly happened back in January, about 6 months before Kyron went missing. So in July, several of Terry's friends were subpoenaed. One of those was Dee Dee Speicher. Law enforcement says that Dee Dee was very cooperative and that she allowed them to search her home, and she was questioned for 3 hours. Then, in August of 2010, law enforcement was looking into reports of an individual inside Terry's truck that morning, apparently witnessed by two people. And then we jump forward almost 2 years, so now we're in June of 2012. This is when Desiree filed a civil lawsuit against Terry claiming she was to blame for Kyron's disappearance, attempting to prove Carrie had kidnapped Kyron. Then on July 30th, 2013, about a year later, Desiree ended up dropping the suit because she didn't want to interfere with the police investigation. Now, to me, after reading all of this, this case seems both like a simple one and a complicated one all at the same time. It seems like, based on the available information, that something happened with Kyron's stepmother somewhere when he was dropped off at school. The big thing that jumped out at me was the fact that the teacher said that Terry had told her that Kyron had an appointment that day, which is why he wasn't reported missing, because he was expected to be gone. But we know that Kyron didn't have an appointment that day. And there's also, with Terry, there seems to be a lot of changing stories. There are reports that someone else was in the car with her. And clearly, this is not a case where Kyron just wandered off into the woods. He was young, but he was 7. He was old enough to know not to go so deeply that you get lost. Plus, all of those woods and water surrounding that area were searched very thoroughly. He was nowhere to be found. So it seems like all indications are there was some kind of an abduction. But at the same time, we have no evidence. No one has found any solid evidence as to what actually happened to Kyron that day. But what we do have is a lot of theories. A lot of people have been heavily invested into this case for over a decade now. So after a short break, we're going to get into all of the theories that are out there on the internet.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Leah, and we're from the Grown Up Stuff podcast.
And just in time for tax season, on this week's episode, we're chatting with CPA Lisa Green Lewis about how small businesses can tackle their taxes using TurboTax Business.
a Forbes study mentioned that a whopping 93% of small businesses overpay their taxes. And 17% of Gen Zers believed that you could write off any expense as a business expense. So
can't blame them.
It's really important to do your taxes right.
Listen to Grown Up Stuff on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The most common theory out there by anybody who studied this case, as I'm sure you already guessed, is Terry. That Kyron's stepmother Terry had something to do with his disappearance. This theory is believed even by Desiree and Kane, who have been very vocal about it. They believe that Terry is responsible for Kyron's disappearance. In a book that Desiree was somehow involved in making, we're not sure if she wrote it or if she just contributed to it, but the book is called Boy Missing, The Search for Kyron Horman by Rebecca Morris. It's said that Kyron's bus driver and a classmate and their family witnessed Kyron leaving the school with Terry that morning. Now, Terry still maintains that the last she saw of Kyron was when he was walking to his classroom that morning. But the rest of the timeline would have made it impossible for Terry to have went back to the school and gotten Kyron after she left and went to the first store. Those times that I mentioned earlier have all been confirmed. But Desiree in her book says that Terry changed her story a lot. She also addresses Kyron's doctor appointment, saying that she did make the appointment for the next Friday, and she didn't know how Kyron's teacher had gotten it confused. But a lot of people questioned the gap in Terry's timeline when she was driving on rural roads to soothe Kiara. Desiree said that Kiara was not sick that day and had instead been sick the previous week. It's also noted that around the same time, Terry's friend Dee Dee was absent on her lunch break at work. Her co-workers could not find her anywhere on the property despite her phone and car being there. Police did test the truck Terry drove for DNA and found DNA from Kyron in the bed. Desiree said that Terry came home and told them that it was blood. Desiree also cites Terry's actions after Kyron went missing as a reason for her suspicion. She said that Terry acted like nothing had happened, posting on Facebook and going about her daily life. And Desiree also says that Terry was annoyed every time she was questioned by police and seemed uncomfortable. And it also came out that Dee Dee had bought herself and Terry burner phones so they could communicate without anyone knowing. In Desiree's book, she also said that Terry washed Kyron's jacket and backpack the day he went missing. She also claims that there were emails that Terry had exchanged, which made it seem like she hated Kyron and blamed him for her failing marriage. And on the day that Kyron went missing, Terry was planning to leave Kane. Desiree said in an interview that she believes that Terry would hurt Kyron to hurt Kane. And of course, there's the thing that I mentioned earlier, the landscaper who came out and told police that Terry had tried to hire him to kill Kane. He told police this after Kyron went missing, and allegedly he brought the money that Terry had given him with him. And of course, it was after this Kane moved out with his daughter and filed the restraining order. After the divorce, Terry gets supervised visitation with Kiara, but she never agreed to the stipulations, which included cooperating with the police in Kyron's case and getting cleared of being a suspect. Terry was also never charged or convicted for the murder for hire. It's also come to light, and Terry doesn't deny this, that she was sexting with one of Kane's friends the month that Kyron went missing after his disappearance. Now, she said on that Dr. Phil interview that Kane had also been sexting someone, and this was her way of getting back at him by sexting one of his friends. Now, of course, that's very circumstantial, but the way Terry acts is really strange. Now, this part of the theory is really circumstantial, as Erica notes here, but when she was watching the Dr. Phil interview, she just said the way she was acting in that interview is very, very strange. It always looked like she was very clearly lying and making up stories, and she didn't seem to show any concern at all for Kyron. What we know about Terry is that she was called a suspect in some written documents, but she was never officially named as a suspect. She was also never officially cleared. So as I'm sure you assumed, that is the number one theory. That's the scenario that most people suspect happened. Something to do with his stepmother, Terry. But again, I want to be very clear that we have no evidence of that. She's never been charged with a crime. This is just the information that's out there. And this is what Kyren's parents, Cain and Desiree, believe happened. But even with that, as I said earlier, it seems very simple and also very complicated at the same time, because there's a lot of things that certainly make Terry look suspicious, but nobody has any clue about the details about what happened that day. But with that being said, we do want to cover, there's a couple other theories that are out there where people have discussed these. Erica went into the deep, dark droves of Reddit and tried to find what people are saying, what theories are out there, just so that we make sure we share everything and not just the information about Terry. So there is another theory that an unknown man asked for Kyren's help loading something into his truck that day. Supposedly, Kyren's friend heard the exchange and witnessed Kyren's teacher agreeing to let Kyren help. But this theory has no evidence. The teachers never said that happened. This seems to be just rumor with no basis in reality, but there are people that believe that this is what happened to Kyren. Then, of course, there's a theory that Kyren just wandered off. It's actually a pretty popular theory, is that he wandered off into the forest near the school. It is a very large and dense forest, and that Kyren has been described as being kind of dreamy and getting distracted. But it seems his mother and stepmom believe he would not go wandering off alone. Desiree has said in multiple interviews that he was the kind of kid that did what he was told. And Terry had said that Kyren is not very adventurous and kind of timid. He would follow a friend if they went, but he wouldn't go anywhere like that alone. And the last theory is that this was some kind of a stranger abduction. And again, this theory has no evidence whatsoever, but the theory is that a stranger could have come into the school and took Kyren, or that Kyren, for some reason, exited the school and the stranger took him while he was outside. There have been witnesses who said that they saw a man sitting in Terry's truck, as I mentioned earlier, outside that morning, but it could have been a different white truck, or the entire theory could be false. Again, there's no evidence to support this. But from here, what we need to do is figure out what we might be able to do to help. I know that we have a lot of listeners that live up in the Portland area, and of course it's possible Kyren could be anywhere. So what I would ask all of you to do, just take a couple of minutes, look in the show notes here, and Erica is going to put a series of links. These links have photos of Kyren, information about the case, where you can email tips in. They have photos of Kyren at the time he went missing, and then pictures where they've aged him up to the age he would be now. He does have that very distinct scar on his forehead. So if nothing else, if everybody can just go to the websites, look at it, and see if maybe, somehow, possibly, you have seen or know Kyren Horman. He's been missing since 2010, and police are still no closer to finding him or finding out who took him. There is a $50,000 reward for information leading to the resolution of his disappearance. So if you have any information concerning this case, please contact the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office at 503-988-0560. That's 503-988-0560. Or you can send an email with any tips to tips@mcso.us. That's tips@mcso.us. And you can also contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Their tip line is 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-THE-LOST. And with that, I know this episode was very different than anything we've done before. I'm quite literally just working off pages of notes that Erica had taken on this case, whereas I'm usually reading a script. But I think this was a great case to cover. And I want to thank Lori for submitting it. And if you have a case or a topic that you'd like to have us discuss on a future episode, make sure you email us or message us through social media and let us know. Because this is the time during the process where we're always looking for what you guys want to hear. We have just now obtained the full case file for the case that we believe we're going to be covering in season 17. And it is a ton of material in 99% of our time for the next couple of months is going to be reading, studying, and organizing that case material. So one thing you guys can do to help us is let us know what do you want to hear about in your episodes on Sundays. And with that, we'll talk more about this case with Zach and Janet this week on the Friday Follow-Up. Thanks, everybody. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.